and my family. It's like we're cursed to fight amongst ourselves while everyone else suffers for it. Now Asgard's in ruins, and well, this sister Hela, I don't even know if I can beat her.
You're Thor. You could kill your sister.
Yeah, I'm Thor without his hammer.
You're not the god of hammers. You're Dumbo.
Doesn't sound like a compliment.
It's totally a compliment. Dumbo, Dumbo!
This sounds like you're calling me Dumbo over and over again.
Dumbo!
Say it once more and I'll tear your head off.
Elephant. Start the show before he does it! Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, and I'm Brian Brushwood, and that was Thor, God of Hammers.
Dumbo.
No. Dumbo. You're just saying, now we're stealing their bit. We can't just steal their bit. That's a Disney bit.
Okay, we're going to cease and desist, Dumbos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man, that was a deleted scene from Thor Ragnarok, showing that even the garbage left on the floor is better than everything else.
Yeah, yeah, that seemed like, it doesn't really add thing to the movie, even though it's insanely hilarious. You have to absolutely go watch it. Want to welcome to the show. Been too long since we had GFQ's Andrew Zarian along. Andrew, you're a newly minted cord cutter.
I am officially. I mean, I was dabbling a little bit, but now
you were cord curious before, but now you've gone full cutter.
I was cord curious, and now I'm a full cutter at this point. I'm sorry. You know, I feel it in my wallet every week, every month when I'm saving $200+ a month on cable. So
are you saving that much? Can you talk us through your setup?
Yeah. So I was obnoxious, and I had a cable box almost in every room that had a TV. And I just realized that I haven't been watching any television at all on any TV. I mean, literally YouTube and podcasts like you guys and video casts like you guys. That's all I've been watching. So I just told my wife, I'm like, I think we should cut it. And Jess goes, yeah, let's get rid of it. And we called, and $230 a month later, I'm putting it in my pocket. So, you know, it feels good.
That's great. So what are you leaning on for all of your video watching needs? And is there anything that you can't get that you miss already?
Yeah, you know what it was initially when I did it? It was more of live sports because I'm a baseball fan and football season, I'm watching football. And it was we're trying to figure out what to do. But I got Hulu Live, you know, their Hulu TV service, and it was more than enough. And I also have YouTube TV because I've been testing that service for a while. So it's really nothing is really missing for me. Generally, I mean, my daily TV consumption consists of, you know, Hulu and YouTube.
Excellent. Well, you know what? We got some reports from folks in the audience with some of their setups as well. We can match them up and compare them a little later on in the show. But let's start off with the primary targets. I'll tell you all a little story about Viacom. Now, just to bring folks up to speed who maybe do, Viacom, not CBS. They used to be part of the same company. Now they're separate. Viacom owns the Paramount Film Studio and like MTV, Comedy Central, etc. Viacom has been pulling their channels off of some of the streaming services like PlayStation View, for instance. Now, we think Viacom has a reason, has a method to their madness. Though this be madness, there is method in it. Viacom is acquiring a web video conference. You might be familiar with VidCon. In 2017, VidCon drew more than 30,000 attendees, many of them online video personalities. And last month, Viacom acquired Hoosay, a marketing firm that targets the younger demographic online with branded content. So maybe pulling that stuff off of some of the streaming services was not being stuck in the mud. Maybe Viacom was positioning themselves to take it to the kids. And Viacom does plan to launch its own streaming service in the U.S. by September with content from across the Viacom library. They're not giving a lot of details, but remember, Comedy Central, MTV, etc. Viacom CFO Wade Davis said that Viacom has been pulling content from third-party services so they could put themselves into position to create this new streaming service. They know they were losing a little money in the meantime. But you should assume that we are really putting all of Viacom's assets against this, said Davis. And then we get to this quote. Viacom says it sees its new streaming service as a multi-channel video programming distributor, like a cable TV provider complement product. complement product. In other words, it goes along with streaming services, not to be seen as a cord cutting service.
Yeah, that's weird. That's a weird fine line that they're dancing, and more power to them. That is exciting. Buying VidCon is a really interesting move, and I'm not sure entirely what it does. I guess it does buy you a lot of eyeballs, and if you want to kind of compete against YouTube, then what you do is you buy the place that all the YouTubers go to, and then you remind them that your new hot alternative to YouTube is available.
And data. You get all of the data from all of those people who sign up to VidCon, what they're interested in, who they think is most popular, who the hot stars are. You get all of that.
Yeah, I mean, VidCon to me seems like a great place for them to draw leads on advertising, you know, to find out who's popular, who's not, and where to put your ad budget in. But the concept of them kind of saying, maybe we're going to compete with YouTube, and we have all these attendees that are YouTubers. You know, maybe we could incentivize it for the big people. And, you know, they're Viacom. They're an old conglomerate that has the power to do it. This streaming service thing is interesting to me because, you know, you said, Tom, you know, maybe they're not stuck in the mud. This is their way of saying, like, hey, we're up and coming. You know, we're like everybody else. But maybe the concept of taking the Viacom family and making their own streaming service, or kind of making it into a package, is exactly that. And it's this old way of, you know, providing content and providing media to people. How interested would people be in subscribing to a Viacom-based subscription service that would, you know, for you to get your Jersey Shore fix from MTV?
Feel like maybe I didn't explain this carefully enough, and Viacom's being a little vague about it, but what they said was, this new service will not be aimed at cord cutters. It will be a cable channel complement.
Similar to, for example, nobody cancels cable and then signs up for Netflix. They have Netflix along with their cable subscription.
Well, it's similar to what NBC Sports does right now, right? You have a cable subscription, you can sign into the NBC Sports app. If you don't have a cable subscription, it's not any good to you.
So it's just going to be based on to kind of lock you into cable, and it provides
you,
you know.
That's what it sounds like. It sounded all great. Everything you were saying made sense. Like, oh, VidCon, so you can like tie into what the youth market and what the younger demographic are into. Makes perfect sense. You've got MTV. Create a streaming service. Oh, I get it. You don't want people going to PlayStation View. You want them to come and give you money. That's why you're part of Philo. Now I get it. And then they say this thing about, oh, we're not aiming it at cord cutters. We're aiming it as a complement product to your cable subscription. What?
Yeah,
traditional linear. They use the term traditional linear.
Oh my God.
I wonder how much. It's so weird to me that Viacom was the one that initially tried to quite literally sue YouTube out of existence. And now here they are, you know, 8 years later, buying the number one YouTube vlogging convention on the planet. I don't want to say that they're kind of mishmashy, scattershot with all this, but I will say that I rather enjoyed running across the name of VidCon CEO Jim Lauterbach, who 10 years ago was one of the folks who gave the green light to Scam School, which is now, in 2 months, will hit its 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, it's congratulations, Jim. I worked with Jim at Tech TV. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be happier for his part of this. And being able to benefit from that. So good job, Jim. I'm still stuck on this. Like, everything you say, everything you did leads up to, and we'll be launching a Viacom streaming service. And then you undercut it by saying, oh, but it's not aimed at cord cut. Why not?
I mean,
it sounds like at best, it's one of these AMC things. Like, AMC has a product where you can pay a little extra on top of your cable bill in order to see some extra things on the AMC app.
That's what it sounds like to me, that this is a companion thing for, you know, for $2.99 or $4.99 a month. You get access on top of your cable bill. You get access to the Viacom family of channels that have, you know, all the things that you've ever watched on Viacom.
Think about it this way. There's nobody more deeply in bed with cable than Viacom. We might have put HBO in that same category until HBO just up and decided to offer their stuff independent, and they survived, and it's done very, very well, and they've been able to monetize what was the most pirated content. Now instead becomes a way for everyone to pay a monthly fee so that they could watch Game of Thrones. They right now could not possibly say, yes, we too see the writing on the wall for cable. They cannot say those words aloud. But what you can do is make up gobbledygook, tell what you know is a lie about a companion service and buy real estate for what obviously is going to be the hot new part of town. So that's what it feels like they're doing right now. Everything that they're saying, I think, is nonsense and BS, and I don't believe it. I think they see the writing just like everyone else, and they're internally, they're like, we need some excuse, some reason to buy this real estate, because this is clearly where everything's going.
I mean, Disney did it. Disney is like, we're launching our own streaming service.
Yeah.
No problem. Yeah. And we're also on board with every streaming service out there, PlayStation, Sling, Hulu, YouTube, whatever. Like, I don't understand why Viacom wouldn't. That doesn't make you wrong, though. Like, what you said just so has the ring of truth to me. And in fact, I'll go even farther with your analysis and say it may even be like different groups. Like a group of people are like, no, we can't piss off the cable people. And another group saying, but we have to have the real estate ready. And this is their compromise solution or something.
It does really sound like that. It sounds like a in-between deal. You know, they're trying to cover both grounds. They understand where the market is headed. They understand how cable is, you know, changing, or media consumption is changing. But they also don't want to, you know, upset what's the primary, you know, source of viewership at
this point. Well, and understand, it's not like they're a privately owned company that's able to just do whatever they want. And they have shareholders to keep happy, right? They have to.
The majority owned by National Amusements, though. And CBS is out there doing CBS All Access, and it's the same majority owner.
All right, so. Fair enough.
No, man, it's weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it shakes out. Let me put it this way. The odds of them launching this and intending for it to be the final form, I think, are very, very slim. I think I give a 50% possibility of it actually launching as described, and I give it a 50% chance of that of lasting more than 6 months before they do some restructuring and then suddenly happily announce that it's a standalone competitor to Disney's streaming service.
Well, as usual, Grounded Brian talked Crazy Tom down off the ledge. So,
oh, what is our relationship, Tom? We've got to go see a therapist.
Now, listen, one of the things, in all fairness to Viacom and everybody else, is one of the things is the complex chain of revenue that they have to go through. If Viacom wants your money, they have to get it through a cable company. You have to get it to a cable company, and the cable company slices up, and then a little bit goes to Viacom. Or they have to get it from an advertiser, which means some of you have to go buy a product, and that makes it worth the advertiser spending the money on the Viacom channel. We got rid of all of that here at Cord Killers, right, Brian?
Yeah, man. Look, it's a brand new idea. I invented it last week and then used a time machine to send it 4 years into the past. It's called Patreon. It's called Value for Value. It's called Is This Program Worth a Buck? Then we'd love to have it. It's called You 1,505 Magnificent Bastards Have Transformed Our Lives for the Better. Being an independent creative is more viable than it's ever been at any time in my entire life, and it's because of you guys. If you dig the show, let's get some action. Get some skin in the game, man. You get access to your very own RSS feed. You early access to a whole bunch of stuff. And more importantly, you get voting shares, which means you get to boss us around and call us our boss, because you're our boss.
Yeah, literally our boss. You can be that if you're not already at patreon.com/cordkillers. And now, thanks to you 1,500 beautiful souls, we'll continue the show with How to Watch. Now, here's our contra example to Viacom. ESPN Plus is going to launch next month for $5 a month. Disney CEO Bob Iger said the internet service will have thousands of hours of live programming. You won't need a new app. It'll just be part of the existing ESPN app. Won't need a cable subscription. It's just $5 a month. What could be better? Well, won't have any of the program from the existing ESPN channels. So no NFL, no Major League Baseball, no NBA. None of all that stuff on ESPN proper, ESPN 1, ESPN 2, ESPN News, all of that, you'll still have to have some sort of subscription to access. ESPN Plus will be the extra stuff, your CFL games, your high school sports, the hockey games that aren't part of the NHL, stuff like that. So if you're like really into a certain sport that isn't covered elsewhere, or if you just want to have all the sports you possibly can, $5 a month. I don't know. What do you think, Brian? Is that a good balance?
Tom, remember when I said nobody was more heavily tied to cable than Viacom? I think there might be one counterexample.
You'd like to roll that back a second?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, and in this case, I mean, you know, they don't have the licenses to put all that good stuff. This is just garbage that they have. Forgive me.
Oh, no, they have the licenses. Just so you know, I mean, everything they put on Sling TV is licensed.
But they
could do this themselves. They absolutely could. They don't want to yet.
To me, this kind of sounds like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Flow Sports. And essentially the concept is you pay a higher cost, like $20 a month, and you get access to all these very niche, you know, type of sports streaming services like Flow Gymnastics or Miles Sprint or all these, you know, secondary and third group sport interests for streaming. That's what it kind of sounds like to me. Like, you can watch a rodeo, you can watch, you know, Flow Racing. That's kind of, maybe that's the direction that they're going to, and they could afford to only do it for $5 when Flow Sports does it for, you know, 15 to 25.
And I guess the thing I'm imagining from this is that, you know, when ESPN first started, it was not terribly popular because they insisted on covering all of the sports. And it wasn't until they figured out, no, we're only going to do, what is it, the four most popular sports. We'll just figure out ways to do it 24 hours a day and have different takes on the same events over and over and over again. That's worked out really well. My guess is that they still have the ability to cover all the rest of the sports, and that maybe this is the bin where a lot of that stuff will go in. You can get caught up on your curling and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from the way it looks to me, ESPN strikes deals because they've had a lot of this stuff available for free. I mean, that's the thing. If you really follow this stuff, you used to be able to get it as ESPN3 on the web for free. And now they're going to be moving it into this tier where you pay $5 a month. But yeah,
when did they kill ESPN3 for good?
It was a couple of, I want to say maybe 5 years ago now.
Was it because of lack of viewership and it was just a money loss, or because they just shifted to their other streaming platform?
They wanted to make it a bonus for people logging into the Watch ESPN app. They didn't want you to go to a separate place. So they put it in the Watch ESPN as a bonus. I think you still could get some of it free, but the idea was to encourage you to log in with your cable subscription. So now they're just saying, well, you won't need a cable subscription. You'll just subscribe to this stuff separately. And to your Viacom point, Brian, this definitely feels like having the real estate. Set up the subscription service and get the kinks out of that, so that when you do want to make an option of like, oh, for another $15, you can have all the ESPN. They'll already have the infrastructure in place.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, but keep in mind that sports enthusiasts are the recipients of a subsidy from everybody who buys cable. What is it? $35 of every $100 that you spend on cable ends up going to ESPN or sports stuff, and whether you watch sports or not. So they are going to be so super tied to the cable industry. They've got no reason to want to disrupt that. So if you are going to buy some real estate, some insurance, some just-in-case territory, then I'm not going to say this is the best move, but I'm going to say I understand this move given their inventory and what they have available.
I'm guessing a lot of this content is, we want to show, let's just use this Canadian Football League as an example. We want to show the Grey Cup on ESPN. So we'll just buy the rights for all CFL in the U.S. from Canada, from the CFL. But what do we do with the rest of the games? Well, put them on ESPN3. Oh, we don't do ESPN3 anymore. Okay, just put them in and watch ESPN. Oh, wait, we're going to do the subscription service. We need some content to fill it up while we test it. Oh, okay, put the CFL stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to backtrack and figure out if my $35 number was accurate or enough.
Oh, no, let's just say it's not accurate, but it's poetically accurate.
Sure, like,
yeah.
It's
sure.
A lot. I think they get, Open Bayou in our chat room says they get $6 per sub. That sounds about accurate.
Yeah, there was some study that did an aggregate thing about all the things that all the sports subsidies get. But
because relatively speaking, the other channels are pennies.
Correct. Yeah. Or possibly or making their money makers for them. You know, it's like oftentimes you'll have networks that they have to pay for the right to be on the cable box, whereas ESPN has figured was the one of the first to figure out they could reverse that.
There have been calculations, too, where they go and say, well, these are the people who actually want ESPN. If they all paid for it and nobody who actually pays for it through their cable subscription but doesn't want it didn't pay, how much would you have to charge?
And it was, and it I think that's the number I'm thinking of, is that $35. Yeah, it was way up. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get on to what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like you, it's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
All right, we got some things in development. Disney announced on Tuesday last week that David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, you know them as the Game of Thrones folks, are going to write and produce a new series of Star Wars films, not television shows, and they will be separate from both the Skywalker saga, episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc., and separate from Rian Johnson's trilogy that is also going to be separate from the Skywalker saga.
Good question mark?
It remains to be seen.
I don't know.
Good folks who know how to make epic stuff at movie length, if not actually movies, with Game of Thrones. Great that it's like freedom to explore a part of the universe that doesn't have the constraints of the Skywalker saga.
How much did Disney buy Marvel for? It looks like $4 billion. And then Disney bought Lucas Films for another $4 billion. The more I look at this, the more I see what they've done with both. And it might be that this is just the initial inertia, that they're having to slowly pivot and it takes a few movies to start having stuff make money. But with Marvel, it's pretty clear now they bought a rich tapestry, innumerable characters, stories, and corners of all varieties, prepackaged, ready to go, and an install base of people who love their stuff. And Star Wars, I'm increasingly convinced that all you bought was laser swords and spaceships. There's very little pre-built into it. Now, granted, they got the expanded universe, but it doesn't seem like they're really using any of that stuff. And I don't know. I'm just increasingly suspicious and emotionally at arm's length from what's happening to the Star Wars universe and what has happened so far. Now, having said that, the most recent film is my favorite one since all the way back to Empire Strike Back. But I don't know. I don't know, Tom. Like, I hope it's good. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, so, you know, my father is a fanatical Star Wars fan. So even if I disliked it, I would have no choice but to watch it. But I enjoy, I mean, the latest films are phenomenal, and I've enjoyed every single one of them. But this is the story, right? It's the expanded universe that Disney will capitalize on and create film after film after film, and then TV shows after TV shows, and expand on that. But at what point will it turn negative? At what point will the Star Wars universe of fans say, okay, guys, you know, you've taken this and you're spreading yourself a little too thin here. You know, I don't know. I don't like to jump to conclusions and say maybe this is bad, maybe this is good, but it's in the right hands. I mean, these guys.
Well, here's what, and you're right. That is one thing I'll definitely vouch for. Benioff and Weiss did something truly extraordinary in that they did the almost impossible, which is take a beloved literature fans franchise or novel franchise and turn it into something even better. I mean, I think even the deepest fans of George R. R. Martin's work will admit that
absolutely
that the what they created is better than the original, or at least as good. With that in mind, I'm kind of disappointed because with Marvel, we've seen heist movies, we've seen superhero movies, we've seen versions that feel like spy movies, and we're getting ready to see with Ant-Man and the Wasp romantic comedies, all within the same shared universe. And I thought that with Lord and Miller doing Solo, we were going to see that with Solo being the first comedy movie. But then they you know, cut the nuts off that halfway through and put Ron Howard in charge. And now it looks like it's trying to be another space epic. I mean, it probably will be great, whatever. But I was really excited about seeing some corners and some attitudes to the Star Wars universe that we haven't seen before. But instead, same mistake as always, just everything folds in on itself. Like, it's a small universe after all.
It absolutely can be an expanded universe with lots of different stories. Star Wars, more than Marvel, I think, could be a universe where people actually can tell weird stories they couldn't tell anywhere else with a theme of familiarity that people will love. But yeah, it has to be the balance. The familiarity has to be very small, but just enough that people go, yes, I am in Star Wars. Because if it's too much, like it was with Rogue One, then you get the reaction Brian's talking about. We're like, more of the same. And so the big question is, can Kathleen Kennedy foster that environment?
The other side would be, you know, because it's such a mega hit. I mean, everybody knows Star Wars. And even though there's a fanatical base that goes and sees every movie and reads the books and follows the universe, there's also a group that only goes and sees, you know, the big blockbusters and really doesn't follow it. When Disney decides to kind of veer off in the universe and tell a whole different story, will the casual moviegoer turn around and say, oh, this was a good Star Wars movie? Or will they say, hey, this isn't Star Wars. What am I watching?
No, I think the casual moviegoer is your test case, is your litmus case. You want them to say it was a good story. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but I really love that movie because that's what Marvel was able to do. People said, oh, I don't know who Iron Man is. I don't follow Marvel comics. But wow, that was a really good movie. That was a really fun story.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's the other thing, too, is you bought a batch of iconic characters, largely with which they've done a tremendous job. I don't know how many iconic characters you bought when you bought the Star Wars franchise. I mean, you know, you're wedging, oh, it's Jabba the Hutt. What's he doing over here?
Well, it's all that extended universe stuff you're talking about. And whether they can or be iconic or not is the question. Yeah. Iron Man wasn't an iconic character before, but they made him one. And
yeah.
So that's the trick. Deadline sources say Disney streaming service. This is the one that will be a Disney over-the-top streaming service that you subscribe to independently of Disney's channels. We'll focus on content consistent with the Disney brand. That means it's family-friendly stuff. So expect 4 movies and 5 TV series to be original to the streaming series or to the streaming service in its first year. They are developing original content based on 3 Men and a Baby, Sword in the Stone, Don Quixote, and Lady and the Tramp, with 2 films in post, including Magic Camp and Noel, starring Anna Kendrick. There also will be TV series based on High School Musical, Monsters, Inc., a Marvel-based series, and series based on Star Wars.
Original content, including 3 Men and a Baby, Sword in the Stone, Don Quixote, and Lady and the Tramp. These words, original content, I don't think they mean what Disney thinks they mean.
That means they're not the original 3 Men and a Baby movie. They're like an original movie based on the original movie.
I mean, Disney is too good at what they do for me to, from the bottom of Mount Olympus, criticize them. But man, oh man, am I enchanted by the idea of new stories instead of repackaged, reliable stories.
Well, and okay, our only hope there. What's that?
I'm very excited for 3 Men and a Baby.
They will never recreate that baby peeing scene. Yeah, you know that iconic scene in 3 Men and a Baby? Apparently that was when Tom Selleck is doing the diaper, lifts up the baby, the diaper falls off and the baby pees. All of that, you know, that wasn't a CG baby. That apparently was just genuine lucky movie magic in that moment.
That's amazing. I think our only hope here is that what Deadline is hearing about this is sources who want to say the familiar things. And not, I mean, imagine if this had just been, sources say they're developing a movie called Magic Camp and Noel.
Sure.
You'd have been like, I don't know what those are. So, you know, if you want to get people excited, you say the things they're like, oh, I love 3 Men and a Sword in Don Quixote.
That scene where both those dogs are eating that sword and then they almost kiss.
kids, don't watch. Netflix has purchased Extinction, a Michael Pena and Lizzie Kaplan-led sci-fi thriller that was dumped by Universal. So kind of what they did for Paramount with Cloverfield, they are now doing with this movie. Extinction stars Pena and Kaplan as a married couple who have to protect their family during an alien invasion.
Lots of potential there. I'm in.
I mean, are you in on this idea of Netflix picking up the scraps?
Yeah, I totally am, because I think that they are good bargain hunters. And I think that, keep in mind, I just was lamenting that not as many original tales are being told. Part of it is because we have a movie studio system that rewards reliable, profitable hits. And of course, there's nothing safer than doing what you did last time. And it's stuff like this that's allowing for people to take chances. Keep in mind, the folks who did Stranger Things were originally applying for the job for It, and they got passed over. And instead, they took that raw talent and energy, and they created something nostalgic and wonderful and terrifying and exciting, truly a brand new, unique story. And so in that regard, yeah, maybe you're going to pick up some stinkers because they're cheap. But I think by and large, you're looking at an opportunity to really enable small storytellers.
Yeah, it seems like that's the direction that they're headed, with more original content, the more content that they purchase and are Netflix exclusive, rather than, you know, the old model of Netflix. I, you know, again, to kind of go back to the casual viewer, is that the direction they want to go on, or, you know, are they just interested in watching The Office over and over again? This is something that we're going to find out over the next couple of years when we see subscription services become more competitive, and seeing what Netflix's exact direction is going to be.
I think Netflix really has its eyes on the long tail. I think early on they developed a distaste for even as good of a deal as they got with the Starz content. Once that was a deal that ran out, and then they had to say, well, what do we do after this? And I think they're realizing that own everything. Make a giant, fat, vertical stack and enjoy the long tail as it becomes big enough to envelop the world.
Swallow the tail, Netflix.
Sure.
Let's move on to the trailer park. Hulu's Hard Sun has a trailer out. It begins streaming on March 7th. It's a television series about the world ending in 5 years. But maybe not everybody knows that. And maybe not everybody wants everybody to find out. The show is a detective show, though. It's like a procedural detective show in that world.
Wow. All right.
Looks pretty good, actually, if you watch the trailer. I'm doing a horrible job describing it, I think.
No, I'm in.
Yeah, the trailer looks great.
Yeah. Extinction level event coming to you. Jessica Jones trailer for season 2 is out. She drinks, she glares, she investigates evil, fights crime. Come back on March 8th to Netflix.
How are you? You get excited for all the, you keep giving all the chances to the Marvel movies, Tom.
Stop accusing me of things.
I keep giving up on them halfway through.
I am the one who watched Iron Fist all the way through.
Okay, that's, you know what, that's probably the best way to put it. As somebody who's watched Iron Fist all the way through,
one of the few that
how
survived.
Are you feeling about this?
Oh, here's the thing though, I love Jessica Jones. I love the actor, I love the character.
She's great.
I actually don't care if this is entirely just the same story as season 1 with different villains. I will be fine with that. Whether that's enough to make other people interested, I doubt. And I have the feeling from looking at this trailer that it's kind of more of the same.
Kind of a spoilery trailer.
Yeah. Or I'm kind of hoping it's not as spoilery as it looks, but it sure looks spoilery.
I was watching it and getting a sense, oh, this feels like a mid-season reveal that you just told me.
Right. But then maybe that means it's like that's a twist where it's like, oh, you think that's the big thing. But yeah. Netflix will make HBO's documentary miniseries The Defiant Ones available outside the U.S. and Canada on March 23rd. If you remember, that series premiered last summer in July, and it follows the careers of Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine. It's a documentary. So HBO holding on to it in the U.S. and Canada, but giving it to Netflix internationally. Don't forget, I think we've mentioned before that Netflix also is the international cinema distributor for the movie Annihilation that's coming out in February in the U.S., but internationally, you'll see it on Netflix.
Very cool. Strange. Something tells me that this is only the beginning of the strange bedfellows we're going to see on international and national distribution agreements.
Yeah, I see this being a trend in 2018, 2019, where you're going to have different properties, you know, distributing differently amongst international releases compared to, you know, U.S.
Is it a way of normalizing day and date release worldwide? If Netflix does this enough and people get used to it, then when it gets delayed in their market, in other areas, they go, well, wait a minute, why are you doing that? France, I get to see it.
I mean, nowadays, I understand that there are technologies that can make it appear as though you're anywhere. And you can just tunnel from one place to another and be there for the release. You're
talking about those fake vids?
Sure. let's pretend that's what it is.
Andre Tsuko is a beer-drinking, heavy metal-loving red panda from Sanrio who hates her office job and loves death metal and is getting her own show on Netflix starting April 20th.
Oh, my daughters are gonna love this.
I think I'm gonna love this.
I saw a clip of this character somewhere online, and it's super cute. I don't know. She works as an office lady, and then at night goes and screams or sings like screamo heavy metal. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's cute.
Yeah, cute. I mean, screamo heavy metal. Cute. speaking of cute, Deadpool 2 trailer came out, showing off some of Josh Brolin's Cable. That's the name of his character, in its usual irreverent style. Comes to theaters May 18th.
Yep. Dude, Deadpool. Thank you, Deadpool. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Not that you weren't a fine movie, but thank you for the gift that is Logan. Thank you for proving to us that rated R movies can make a lot of money.
You know, we're very lucky it did well. Yeah. They really changed the trend on how these comic book movies are going to be written and kind of done because, you know, it was a very adult movie. It was hysterical. Let's see if they can keep it up for the second one. I think they will. I'm very excited for this because I'm a big X-Men and X-Force fan. So this goes right up, you know, this is right up my alley.
The nods in this trailer to Toy Story made me very happy. A little bit of gentle poking at Disney, who owns the rest of the Marvel franchise, they license.
He's wearing a hoodie outfit.
Yeah.
They also cast some shade on DC with the mustache.
Oh, by the way, I saw a sticker. You know those coexist stickers on the back of cars? I saw one with Marvel and DC icons, like the X from the X-Men and the T from Thor's hammer, the S from Superman. I thought that was funny.
Can you put like a tiny Image Comics logo?
Sure.
All right, let's talk about what we're watching. We'll start with our guest, Andrew. What's been on your screen lately?
So, you know, I end up binge watching on YouTube. At night, generally, I'll find something, and most likely it's because I've been drinking. I'm on my, you know, a bottle and a half of wine, and I just start going down the rabbit hole of videos. And I somehow stumbled on this guy's videos, and he's been doing it for a while. It's called The Gaming Historian, and I really like the stories behind franchises and consoles. And I really fell down this rabbit hole of watching this guy's videos about just all these different properties and all these different, you know, gaming franchises and the console stories and even those little consoles and those little add-ons that maybe Sega made or Nintendo made that we really don't know about.
The 32X and the Sega CD and so on.
Yeah, and he's very detailed with, like, the explanation. He does a very good job, and, it's not this high production thing, but I really start enjoying his content.
So just so you know, here's some fun trivia. Last I heard, there's nothing that YouTube, the algorithm, values more deeply than a video that leads to a binging rabbit hole experience. You can have a terrible 30-second video as long as it causes somebody to descend into a 3-hour binge, then you get credit for that 3-hour binge on there, and it highly values and recommends it. So what I'm trying to say is maybe to clean your palate next time, just watch a quick Modern Rogue episode and then dive down and watch all the rest of those.
Interesting. That's why the Modern Rogue episodes are all tagged with Game of Thrones secrets. I get it now.
Minecraft mods.
Minecraft trip to tricks. Brian, what about you? What you been watching?
Well, it's been 2 weeks, so it's difficult for me to know which stuff I watched this week or before the last time we spoke. I did watch, A Futile and Useless Gesture? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The one about the founding of National Lampoon. Did you ever watch that one, Tom?
No, I haven't.
I liked it. I didn't love it, mainly because I would start to fall in and believe that I was watching the real story of this back in the 1970s, and I didn't mind them breaking character and doing these postmodern self-referential bits. However, I couldn't get over the fact that every piece of dialogue had so clearly been workshopped and gone through 3 revisions that it's just super snappy, unnaturally snappy dialogue with people. But having said that, I did enjoy it, and it was sweet, and there was a clever thing they did. Also, I think we talked about the Polka King. See, I said it right, Bryce.
There you go.
Not the King of Polka.
The King of Polka.
But remember, we talked about the Polka King, and so like often happens with Netflix, they had a documentary on the actual guy, and it's very, very clear watching that documentary that somebody said, oh, yeah, this is the script. Just replace this scene. Let's make this funny. Let's throw in an imaginary character. And just so many of the details, beat for beat, are exactly from that documentary, which made it only more interesting to me. I watched Jumanji with the kiddos. Much better than I thought. Enjoyed it quite a bit. And we'll talk about Black Mirror season 4 episodes 4-6 and Deadwood and Counterpart
on Spoiler in Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I've watched those. I've maintained my Star Trek Discovery and This Is Us watching. I've been watching a lot of the Olympics, which kudos to NBC for making it easier than ever to watch as a cord cutter. You can subscribe to Sling TV for $20, log in and get everything. Bad to them for redesigning the app in a way that makes it more difficult to figure out what is actually live and what isn't. That's been kind of a pain. But for the most part, like, I was able at my in-laws, who don't have any kind of streaming service or cable or anything, but have really good internet, to watch the Olympics at first by Chromecasting, but then their Chromecast kept freezing up. So then we plugged the phone directly in, but for some reason the phone wouldn't fill the screen. So my brother-in-law, who actually works for CNET, was like, well, I'm testing this Razer enclosure. I have a Radeon 580. Let's plug your laptop into that and plug that into the TV. So that's what we did. And we watched the Olympics running through that. It was amazing.
Oh, wow. And everything worked out.
Yeah, everything was great. So many ways.
Like it was like the early days of getting content on your TV. You're just trying every device you have in the house.
Exactly. We have more options than ever. And it was all through my PlayStation View subscription, authenticating through the NBC app. That allowed me to do that, even though I was out of my market and on mobile and all of that stuff. The other thing I want to talk about is Black Panther. I mentioned that I'd seen it last week, but I was not able to talk about it until last Tuesday. This movie is great.
Oh, my gosh. You don't throw around the other G word that often. Yeah, you like the word good. You like saying you liked it. I don't hear great very often from you.
I would almost on my scale. This movie is amazing. I would almost say mind blowing.
Wow.
It is. I hesitate to overset your expectations, but it's good in so many different ways. Let's say you're like, I don't know if I'm into, you know, all of this idea of positive role models. Doesn't matter. It's a great action movie. Let's say you're like, I don't know. I mean, I think it should be, you know, not just strong female characters, but deep. You got it. You have like three deep, well-rounded female characters, not just strong female characters. It's just a really, really good movie set in Africa in a fictional fantasy world where this African nation is so advanced that there's some guilt in that nation over the fact that they haven't shared their technology with the rest of Africa. And that's what Michael B. Jordan's character, who is the villain, brings with him, to the point that you're like, you know, I kind of see his point. I know he's the villain and I'm supposed to hate him.
Those are the best villains, is when you're like, well, you're not wrong, but ... Let's just talk about your methodology for a bit.
Exactly. A little heinous, so, I mean, but it's just so good. The action sequences are insane. The movie is fun. It's deep. It's really good.
Dude, that's great. That's great. Well, I will continue to try to not watch trailers because it's not like I'm not going to go see it the moment it comes out.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what we should be on the lookout for, Bryce.
Hey, we got a recommendation from Jason. He writes, Tom and Brian, I wanted to share a show I recently discovered on Amazon Prime Video, Salvation. Recently, while on break at work, I pulled up Netflix on my phone only to see it was blocked from our network, but Amazon Prime Video was not. I poked around and found this show. Here's the elevator pitch. An MIT student discovers an extinction-level event asteroid is 6 months away, take that, hard sun, from hitting Earth.
Yeah, we're a little lazy much, huh, hard sun? You're going to wait 5 whole years?
So the student goes to an Elon Musk-type figure named Darius Tanz with this information. Tanz develops a plan to save the world, but what follows is a government conspiracy, cover-up, murder, espionage, and treason. It sucked me in. I showed it to my wife, and it sucked her in after one episode. We just binge-watched the entire first season and have stayed up way too late watching it. I highly suggest adding it to your queue. It originally aired on CBS this past summer and ran for 13 episodes. It has been renewed for a second season. Jason, aka Husky Caucasian. Thank you, Jason. Yeah, this is the first season's already up on Amazon Prime Video if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber. And 13 episodes, and it finished airing in September, which makes me think it might be back for the fall season here in 2018. Keep an eye out.
Awesome.
All right. Brian Rushwood, what special treat do you have to share with us this week?
Hey, man, you guys know that we make our money not only through your fantastic donations, but because we have independent projects. Tom writes amazing books, and it used to be that I just had a little online store called Scam Stuff. But then we realized that the idea of a modern rogue was bigger than a tagline for a store, so we started making a show with Jason Murphy and I. We're now 2 years into it, really proud of it. It's over a 500,000 subscribers and climbing. But now all of a sudden we're realizing the modern rogue is a bigger idea than a show about two 40-year-old goofballs trying to make weapons in a warehouse. And so now we're expanding it a little bit more, and man, I could not be more excited about this. Articles, daily articles every single weekday at themodernrogue.com. Everything from cyber crimes that will blow your mind to the most hilarious secrets from the CIA's handbook of deception and trickery. The writers are top-notch, and you're going to come away smarter and more interesting every article you do. If you have an RSS feeder, by all means, please subscribe to the RSS on there and share it with your friends. Share those articles. That makes such a difference, because we got about a 6 month runway on this project, and I think it could be really, really huge. And the back catalog is big enough now that I think it's time to it's our grand opening at themodernrogue.com.
Let's go to the front lines.
Frontlines!
MoviePass lowered its rate again, sort of. If you buy a year of service in advance, you get a $7.95 a month rate, but you have to pay a $20 fee. It ends up averaging out to be $9.61 a month. So it's not much lower than the $9.95 in the end, but it also bundles in the Fandor streaming service, which has indie and art films. MoviePass just pouring gas on its own fire. They added 500,000 subscribers in the past month, and they now have around 2 million.
Have you signed up for MoviePass yet, Andrew?
Yes, I have. My wife and I have signed up. She tends to use it a little bit more than me, but it's amazing actually how they exploded. I mean, everybody that I know that goes tends to go to the movies has purchased, you know, is subscribed to the service.
Right on. Meanwhile, Amazon has hired away NBC's head of entertainment, Jennifer Salk, to run Amazon Studios. Roy Price resigned in October due to allegations of sexual harassment. Salk spent 9 years in development at Fox when she oversaw the launch of Modern Family, Glee, Prison Break, and Bones. Then she then moved to NBC for 6 years, where she has overseen the launch of This Is Us and Dick Wolf's Chicago series of procedural dramas.
She got some cred.
Yeah, that's legit.
I'm just saying, maybe Amazon is in better shape than it was back in October. Anyway.
Yeah, dude. Turns out the richest man on the planet doing all right.
Yeah. I would hope so.
Apple added news to its TV app. If you're not familiar, the TV app is the one that kind of collects all your shows from whatever source, Hulu, HBO, Stars, and tells you, like, this is the one to watch next. And based on the stuff you watch, maybe you want to watch this, and this is where you find it. They recently added live sports to that. They've now added news, which really just means there's a strip of news sources in the app so that if something's going on, you can click on any of the usual sources here in the U.S. They also have Bloomberg and Cheddar in there as well.
Very cool. Hulu added 60 frames per second support for its live TV service, which is good news for sports fans. Hulu also added more options for its DVR service, so you could choose to record reruns, not just new episodes, bookmark a show without recording episodes. All of these are good evolutionary steps for them to take.
Very good.
And you're a new Hulu subscriber, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I have both. I have YouTube TV and Hulu. And I think this is a direct response to YouTube TV's quality, because they do 720, 60, and 1080p even, 1080, 30. So, you know, everybody has to up their game, and this is great. Competition, you know, this is a great example of positive competition, and Hulu kind of getting in the game now.
All right, let's check out the dispatches from the front. Tom Mahoney, our boss from Kansas, writes, "Hi, Tom, Brian, and Andrew." Zero guess. Is there anything you can't, won't, or refuse to watch based on content? For some, it might be language or sexual content. For others, it may just be certain genres. But is there anything that will make you stop watching a movie or series immediately and never go back? The question came to mind after watching Archangel and Crocodile from Black Mirror. In Archangel, the suspenseful opening, spoiler, 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 had me thinking, what terrible thing is Black Mirror going to do? Then, spoiler, 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 happened. I expect Black Mirror to be dark, but that 1-2 punch was just too much. Do any of you have similar experiences? I edited out his description of what happened.
Sure.
If you've seen the episodes, you know what part he was talking
about. This is not my story to tell, but for Bonnie, it is really unfortunate because Bonnie likes smart comedy. She likes satire. She likes she doesn't mind animation. But very often, all three of those are highly correlated with characters with screechy voices. And she just cannot handle it after you spend all day with three adorable ragamuffins squeaking all day. And she just can't handle, if I'm watching South Park or any of the animated greats, that just any squeaky voice. She's like, I'm done. No, off.
Oh, that's so fun. I'll see your wife's story and match it. I can't raise it. But Eileen, for work-related reasons, needed to watch the pilot episode of Rick and Morty. And so I was like, I will watch that with you. What was really funny is I wasn't sure she was going to like it. She laughed at stuff that I did not think she was going to laugh at. There's the scene in the pilot where Rick says, Morty, they're just robots. And then the roach creatures start getting killed and like, tell my family I love her.
Right, right.
She thought that was hilarious. And I was like, oh, okay. At the end, I'm like, what do you think? She's like, oh, this is really funny stuff. Why did he have to have drool on his face the whole time?
Oh, yeah. Well, the burping mid sentence and stuff. I mean, that's too much for Bonnie.
It's really heavy in that first episode.
I get like 3 Rick and Morty coupons per year, and they better be stellar episodes if I'm going to get her to sit down.
Brian, Andrew, I'm in the same boat as you as with Rick and Morty with Jess.
Oh,
same
yeah?
way. She'll watch it. She'll find things funny. And then his voice becomes intolerable for her.
So, well, what about you? Is there any content that's over the line?
Yeah, you know, not necessarily over the line. You know, one thing that I've noticed with, I have a 2-year-old daughter. And now I'm a little bit more conscious about the stuff that we watch in front of her. And, and Brian, you have daughters, right? And
yeah.
You notice that sometimes I've realized that the kids in a lot of these shows are a little too sassy to their parents.
Yes. Oh,
and
my God.
I never realized it until a couple months ago. I had something on and I'm like, oh, my God, this kid's a jerk.
Yes.
You know, to the parents. I forgot what show it was. I'm like, oh, my God.
Disney's nothing but sarcastic, witty teens.
Yeah, it was Disney. Yeah, it was a Disney show. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow, this is really something.
We're old. We're old.
I know.
Why can't they be nice to each other on these shows?
That's disrespectful. Yeah.
They're just so rude. It's like, oh, Dad, come on.
Yeah.
Mike Stewart wrote in and said, hey, guys, in episode 206, Tom said he thought TiVo could make a comeback if they market themselves as The Box. As a TiVo user, I have to say, that strategy will only work if they can convince their partners to code better apps. The Hulu app is especially prone to crashing and hanging up the whole box, forcing a reboot to clear, and the Amazon Video app has no preview and fast forward and rewind, making you guess where to resume play. In addition, some services like CBS All Access don't even have apps. TiVo will never become The Box if they don't have rock solid apps for all the services. Oh, and flipping commercial skip into content skip for the Super Bowl. Replay TV did that 15 years ago.
Simpsons
did it.
Keep
up the good work, Mike, our boss.
And also, I guess you guys called out asking people what they spend money for their replacement for cable. And so we got one email saying, I'm using the following: Netflix $12, Amazon $90 a year, $8 a month, Patreon at $3 a month or $1 per channel, which I dig. It's a perfectly legitimate substitute for traditional television. I used to pay $60 roughly for TV, and when it was going over $100, I canceled. So that's a total of $23 a month. We don't have a simple PlayStation View or other option in Canada, so I'm sticking to these for now.
And then Bill said, hey, killers, my video services are Amazon Prime, Netflix, Giant Bomb, and MoviePass. They total about $35 a month. Interesting that he's counting MoviePass in there. I think that's one you would get whether you have cable or not, but it's part of his package, right? I also set aside about $25 a month for current shows as they appear on Amazon, HBO Now, or Stars. I put whatever's left towards merch from my favorite podcast creators. That comes to about $60 a month, which is my upper limit for video a month. Just another data point from your friendly neighborhood Bill.
I'll tell you what, man, thinking of MoviePass as a subscription, which it is, and it,
yeah.
And the idea, the only thing is, yeah, I like movies. I want a subscription to a movie service. And it's like, well, this movie service shows movies not in your house, but at a place that you could go for free. And I wonder how long until there's going to be, I suppose there probably already is, but some kind of clubs where you have to have a subscription to walk in the door. And I suppose every neighborhood bar is trying to do this to establish as the place for fans to watch the game or whatever. But I can see, you know, gigantic screens, big booming whatevers, you know, themed events, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for Game of Thrones, there are bars that already did that for that. So it's not too far of a step from that to what you're talking about.
Right. 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 And when, especially in a world where, you know, people are willing to pay for subscriptions for sports related things, then, you know, I don't know. I could see a sports version of MoviePass, I guess. Or what about being able to, I guess that's season pass holders is what I'm describing.
and a cover
events.
At a bar.
Yeah. Well, but a cover is like a buying a ticket. I'm thinking more like you buy. I'm sure there are also clubs and bars that have a membership that you get in an exclusive. I don't know. But something scalable like MoviePass would be interesting.
Well, and it would be smart for leagues to get in on that, right? I mean, there's a certain process you go through to get the license to be able to show the TV publicly in the bars you have to pay for. But what if the NFL said, hey, we'll give you a sweet deal on this, you know, if we and give you merch to sell, and all of a sudden everybody's making more money out of that.
You know, and I can even see, imagine if the NFL makes let's say 100 combination restaurant bars nationwide, and they also say, hey, just so you know, every single person who works for the NFL in any capacity is always allowed to eat and drink for free at these places. If you want to go be there around and with them, you could buy a membership for $100 a month or whatever.
Interesting.
So imagine watching an Eagles game with one of the Houston Texans and so on.
Andrew, do you see any of the NFL players actually going in that case?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. I do marketing now. I actually got a day job, for people who don't know. I got two day jobs. GFQ still a day job, but I got two day jobs now. And the company I work for, it's a hospitality group. And we do that for sporting events where we'll reach out to, let's say, a former New York Knick. And we'll say, listen, come hang out. We'll pay you to be here, hang out for a little bit. We'll pay for your food and whatever. And then if people come and want to hang out with you, they come and hang out with you. And I'll tell you, it works 90% of the time, you know?
Very yeah. Cool.
Well, if folks are like, what is this GFQ that he just mentioned? That's Andrew's network. Whole bunch of great content over there, folks. You got to go check it out. Andrew, what's going on there these days?
I'm nowhere to be. Look at that. I'm nowhere to be on that front page.
But does that make you proud?
I am very proud. It no longer revolves around me, which is great. We have some great shows. Gunna Geek is on with us now. We have This Week in Radio Tech, The Ball Truth still with us, and of course the shows that I do is What the Tech with Paul Thurrott on Tuesdays now. We're back to Tuesdays, and Mat Men, which is a pro wrestling show.
Excellent. And where do folks go to find that, and where do they go to find you?
GFQnetwork.com. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian.
Excellent. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com, and we're live at twit.tv/nightattack, also carried on diamondclub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will cut your cords again next week. Be ready.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them, or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.